a lot of people live in denial because they think that to be realistic is to be depressing.
I'm Dr. Mike, host of Going There.
It was the first song where I wrote about how I felt like my depression was killing me and I didn't want it.
Going There breaks the stigma of mental health issues by having real, honest conversations with your favorite musicians, including Alessia Cara, Lizzie Hale, Jewel, Jason Isbell, Gerard Way, Lauren Gray, Shamir, and Barty Strange.
There was something there that was so raw, where I was like, wow, I can't believe someone would say that.
Let's go there on Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network, every other Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, this is David Frangione, CEO and publisher of Modern Drummer Magazine. So excited about our new podcast, the Modern Drummer Podcast. This weekly podcast will bring Modern Drummer to life. Sit back and enjoy fresh, fun, and insightful conversations with today's top drummers, producers, musicians, beatmakers, and craftsmen. Whether you're a professional, a hobbyist, drummer, musician, programmer, producer, or just love music, this show is for you. Every other week, the Modern Drummer Podcast will feature world-renowned producer, songwriter, and drummer, Narda Michael Walden. Narda Michael Walden's Upbeat is featured exclusively on the Modern Drummer Podcast. Everybody, I'm David Frangione, and welcome to this week's podcast with Gerald Hayward. We're here with Gerald and, of course, Billy Amendola. Billy, say hey.
Hey, everybody. How are you? Thank you for tuning in.
So, Gerald, catch us up. How are you doing? What have you been up to? I know you have so much going on. You've done so much already. Let's jump into it.
Gerald!
Well, I could be totally honest, man. You know, like I said, I'm trying to live in this. I've been living in the pandemic, man. I've been trying to, you know, reinvent myself and trying to really, like I said, I'm turning into a studio dude, because that's where we are nowadays. You know what I mean? You know, I'm a professional drummer, but I'm teaching myself how to be an engineer, and I have to know how to be an engineer to be a part of what's happening now in the world, on the internet, in the world, in the music industry. So, you know, I'm doing that. I'm really trying to get into doing some sample packs and different things like that. I've been really blessed, man, to have a room full of drums. So I got a good gauge on what to pick from and everything like that. So I'm just doing that, man. I'm just trying to really get into what's happening today.
What are you playing for drums and cymbals? What's your rig? Who are you endorsing? What do you do there?
Well, I play DW drums. I play Remo heads, Zildjian cymbals, Vic Firth sticks. I have Earthwork microphones. I have, I think that's it. I have Zoom for recordings as far as the mixer is concerned. Trying to make everything work, man. Trying to learn how to push buttons.
And I know you've been doing the Groove X with Russ Miller and Bill Denimore. Tell us a little bit about that, because we actually have a contest running with that as well.
Oh, okay. Groove X Click, man. My boy Russ Miller and, Sarah over there at Groove X Click. I really love the product. It's funny because I have one sitting here right now. And this is a great product, man. It's so dope with the copper inlay, in between the wood. And it sounds like, I have an analogy, and my analogy is, we had HD, and now we have 4K. This sounds like 4K, opposed to just the regular rim on a snare drum in HD. So, HD was last year, 4K is this year.
So explain a little bit, like exactly that goes on the snare drum?
Yes, it goes under the lugs. It has joists here that connect to, you loosen your lugs and you put it on, and then you put this, you tighten your lugs back. And, it sits in a perfect spot. It does not get in the way of you playing chops or going over back and forth. It is perfect. The size of it is perfect. The crispiness, the loudness, it's a great product.
Mount on the snare drum rim closest to where you're sitting.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So you can do rim shots off them as well?
Yes. Yes, I have a video on Groove X Click where I'm actually playing the top of it upright with a stick and not side stick.
Oh, but nice.
It's for side stick, but I play the upright and it's still the same effect. It's still a 4K, it's my ears like it. My ears like it a lot.
That's cool. Yep. All right, let's go. Me and you go back, way, way back.
Yes.
So I'm still going to call you the godfather, not the grandfather, because right. we're not going there. We're not going there yet. We got plenty of time for that. But, of course, you're known as the godfather of R&B and gospel drumming. Uh-huh. And, the people that you've played with, Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson, Britney Spears, Beyonce, Chris Brown. It goes on and on in that era. Britney Spears. Recording nope. with... Teddy no Riley.
Britney. Right. Mm-hmm. No Britney Spears.
Oh, you see now? All right, this is a good thing because I want to keep this in instead of editing it out, because you see how misinformation goes all over all over the web? And this is why we always say you got to come to the source to get the truth. Because right. I noticed a lot of times lately when we've been doing these interviews, if we do a little bit of research, there's things that people say, no, I never played on that album. And it's all over right. Wikipedia. It's all over the place that they did.
Right. No, I would never take the credit for something that I didn't do, because I'm blessed to have a very, very good resume. And my resume, thank God, it speaks for itself. And
Oh, my God. It's phenomenal.
Britney Spears was one that got away. I didn't get to play for Britney Spears. I was asked to play for the Spice Girls. I was asked to play for NSYNC. I was asked to play for 98 Degrees. All of those groups, I missed playing because I would be in, I was being loyal to another group that I was already playing with.
Right.
A story that you don't know is I was supposed to be one of the Fugees.
Wow. I was supposed
to be in the group, the Fugees.
I did not know that.
A lot of people don't know that story, but yeah. so I'm not going to take credit for something that I didn't do, but you know, I know Chris Bailey, I think, played for Britney Spears, I want to say. And a couple other people, Teddy Campbell might have played for her. Yeah, so right. You know, I'm not going to take that credit.
I'm glad we got to clear that up on here, and people should pay attention to, and that's why they need to come to Modern Drummer to get the source and find out the truth about what's happening. But I got to say it, and you know I tell you this all the time because I want to talk about this.
Right.
When you did the Rob Thomas solo album, his first solo album, Something to Be.
Right.
Right out of the gate, I mean, right out of the gate, when we came out, you know, that those toms and that and that started to kick in. I mean, it just blew everybody's mind because nobody knew for a while who was playing drums on that record. And then that record, what you created on that record, it was just something that no one ever heard before because.
Right.
It was rock, but it wasn't rock. And then you started that whole gospel, R&B, you know, playing over the one and all of that stuff just naturally happened. But from you playing on that record and then that whole scene blew up.
Right.
So Billy, specify which song so people can go and listen to it and reference.
Oh, well, Lonely No More. I mean, I listened to it this morning. It's almost like the greatest.
It's one of my favorite records. Honestly, I listen to it every day too, but maybe other people want to check it out or refresh.
Well, no, you have to go to it. Well, Lonely No More. I mean, John Mayer's on that album on Street Corner Symphony. He plays the guitar on that album. I mean, that whole album. I mean, it opens up with This Is How a Heart Breaks with the toms.
Yeah.
I mean, the tom sound alone is so powerful. And let's talk a little bit about that whole process because I know the story, but I want everybody else. I love that story about when Rob called and you called Teddy. Come on, tell us that.
All right. So the thing was, I was on tour with Mary J. Blige. The production manager worked with Rob Thomas and with the Goo Goo Dolls. And he was telling Rob Thomas, like, yo, man, when we get to New York, when we get to Radio City, you got to come hear this drummer, you know? So I, cool. So we have been on the road for 6 months at that time. We get to Radio City, you know, I haven't seen my wife in 6 months, right? So, all right, so we do the gig, everything. Rob comes to the show. The production manager never brings Rob to me because I leave as soon as I play the last beat because I'm trying to get home to my wife to get a couple of days with my wife before I have to go back on the road. So I left, right? So I never met him. But the production manager also never said nothing about Rob or anything when he came. He never said nothing about him after we went back on tour. All right, so cool. So a little while passed. I was out on tour with Beyonce, Ladies First Tour. We on the Ladies First Tour. It's Alicia Keys, Beyonce, Missy Elliott, and someone else. All right. So we have a break. Everybody go home. So these people that I know that work for Alicia Keys, they got called for a gig. The background singers, they got called for a gig. So they went to the gig. The lady that called them for the gig walked in the gig and said, hey, man, does anybody know Gerald Haywood? And one of the background singers was like, yeah, that's my boy. You know, we on tour right now. We play basketball every day, whatever, whatever, right? So she was like, do you have a number on him? And he was like, yeah. So gave her my number. She, in turn, called me. She said who she was. She said she was calling from, it sounded like she said she was calling, I'm calling for Rob Thomas from Matchbox 20, is exactly what she said. So as I'm on the phone and I'm like.
And Matchbox 20 at this point is huge.
Yeah, huge, right? So, you know, as I'm talking to her, she said, yeah, you know, Rob Thomas heard you play. he wants you to come do a song on his new record, his solo record, or whatever. Matchbox 20. She said Matchbox 20. And I was like, okay, cool. She said, I'm going to call Rob now. I'm going to hang up from you and call Rob and let him know I found you. I've been looking for you for over a year to play this one song on Rob Thomas' record. So, all right, cool. No problem. So when she hang up, I instantly call my friend Teddy Campbell. I'm like, yo, Teddy. I'm like, yo, man, you ever heard of this group called Matchbox 20? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, that sounds like rock to me. And he said, it is. I said, yo, man, they just called me. I don't know what to do. Because, you know, that's out of my element. You know, I'm gospel, R&B, and hip hop. That's me.
Growing up in the church.
That's me. So Teddy goes, look, man, whatever it is, take the gig. I was like, bro, like, I don't know how to play that. Like, I don't know that. He's like, don't worry about it. Just say yes. All right, cool. I hang up the phone with him. The young lady calls me back. She said, okay, Rob wants you to do a session tomorrow. Can you do the session tomorrow at the Hip Factory in New York? I said, sure, I can. She said, how much do you get paid with Mary J. Blige per week? And I told her. So told her that. She gave me half of that, but for a day rate. So, all right. So she gave me half of that for the day rate. So cool. I show up at the session. You know, I bring all my drums. I show up at the session. I'm there. You know, I'm sitting there. When I walk in, it's an engineer that works with Timbaland. So I'm like, yo, what's up, man? He like, yo, what's up, man? I said, yo, what you doing here? He said, I don't know. And I said, me neither. I don't know what I'm doing here. Because he, you know, he's the hip hop, you know, guru on the board. So he's that, you know, for Timbaland and everything. So I said, yo, man, I don't know what I'm doing, but we're going to figure this out. So a guy named Max Seletic was the producer. He produces Matchbox 20 too.
And he was in Collective Soul back in the day, and then he became a huge producer.
And he ran I want to say Virgin Records or one of the records.
Oh yeah, companies. He took over. Yeah, with Jason Flom, he took over. He wound up taking over.
Exactly. So okay, cool. So when I get there, I'm there. I'm talking to my boy. We sitting down, whatever. Then Rob walks in. So Rob walks in and he go, hey, you're Gerald? And I go, yeah. And he was like, oh man, I love your playing. You know, I came to the Mary J. Blige concert, blah, blah, blah. I want you to play this song. So I was like, all right, cool. I was like, can I hear the song? We were waiting for Max Seletic because he had to come from work, you know, working at the record label after 4 o'clock. So we there at 12 o'clock, but he don't come to after 4 o'clock. All right, cool. So I was like, yo, can I hear the music that you want me to play on? And he was like, sure. So he made the guy pull it up. So as soon as I heard the drum machine, I was like, all right, cool. This is something else. This is not the rock stuff. You know what I mean? Right. So I was like, okay. So I was like, let me go in the booth and fool around with it and learn it. So he was like, cool. So I go in and I'm playing a song. And it's Lonely No More. I'm playing a song, I'm doing everything, I'm playing it. And I was like, all right, I got it. I came out the booth, I came back into the control room, and Rob was like, yo, that was great. We keeping that. And he was like, I need you to do 12 more songs. I need you for 2.5 months. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait, man, nah. I was like, no, I was just practicing the song. No, we can't keep that. He was like, I love it. And when Matt Seletic walked in and he heard it, he was like, oh yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So I wind up, they had some program drums. I wind up replacing all the program drums in that 2 months. And it's all me. It's all me album. And that's how it played out.
That I love that story because I wanted to remind everybody about that because that was a groundbreaking record, a groundbreaking sound. Coming from a super group at the time and with Smooth and everything, and then doing his first solo album, and then it's not the obvious choice like you said, but you made it work, and you then that was it. the gospel world, I mean, it really, everybody, I mean, you had everybody wanting to play like that. It was a whole new genre of music, which you're responsible for, man.
Thanks.
And Gerald, you played on every track on that record.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Yes, sir. One of my favorite all-time records.
I listened to it a little bit this morning just to refresh, and it's like the greatest hits album.
Yeah. The one thing that made me really overjoyed about doing that record was Teddy Campbell said to me, him and Aaron Spears were sitting down one day and we was talking and laughing and joking and eating. And he said to me, he said, I was so proud of you on that because it sounded authentic. It didn't sound like you were trying to mimic anything. He was like, it was authentic, you know, like smooth rock or something. It was authentic, you know.
Oh yeah, I loved Rob Matchbox 20 and you know, Paul's a great drummer. Of course, Abe Fogle does a great job live. I mean, I loved him, but I never would think that's Gerald, and I know you, and I would, you know. And then when I found out, I was like, oh my, I called you right away. I was like, yeah. Oh my God. And then you told me the story and it was like, yeah, it was awesome. All right, let's jump to the, before that, I want to talk a little bit about the Shed. Let's talk about the way the Sheds that you used to have, because you taught a lot of guys, famous guys, who are famous now.
Right. Well, you know, shedding is just something that we have done for years and years and years and years. I can honestly say that, the Gospel Chops dudes, they kind of brought it to y'all on video. You know, shedding was something that we did in private. It was something that, you know, we would just go into church, set up some drums, and just play and practice. You know what I mean? But, you know, the Gospel Chops, how can I say, the Gospel Chops brand brought it to you guys to see it. You know what I mean? Like, it made it visual. And I respect them for that. I respect them for, you know, showing how we were in church and showing, you know, what was our, you know, the attitude towards drumming. You know what I mean? My attitude towards drumming is very aggressive. You know, my attitude towards drumming, you know, it came out like where I'm from. You know, I'm from New York. You know, New York is a big but tight place. It's tight, you know. It's a whole bunch of drummers in New York and we all fighting to be heard. You know what I mean? And, you know, my style came out to you guys as that. But it came from New York, from living in New York. You know, I was taking the trains and buses when I was 10 years old. You know, like that was something. You know, my kids never took the train or the bus, you know, like they, you know, they took the school bus, you know what I mean? But, you know, just to say the least, I'm just, you know, I'm happy that to be a part of being able to shed. Shedding is, you know, you're collecting information, you're learning, and you're trying to see what you can get out of the drums. And I take that very seriously. I take it and I put it in a category with mentoring and with trying to make other professional drummers. That's my goal, to take the younger guys and help them be professional drummers as I was.
And that's huge. And that's what we're going to have you do. You know, we're asking you at Modern Drummer to collaborate with us on some lessons and seminars and bring that insight, because one of the things we learn as we grow is that to save time and to get from A to B to C to D in the most time efficient way is actually the most valuable result from education. And that's only gotten from guys who have experienced what you have, and you've figured it all out. You've learned it in some ways the hard way. And in other ways, you found faster ways to do it, like it, all education consists of. And now you can bring that to somebody and go, this took me 10 years to learn. Listen, and in 5 minutes, you'll have the lesson.
Yep.
And Gerald is a great mentor, and a lot of people respect him, you know, tremendously, because he is so good at what he does. I mean, you know, you really are, you know.
I just try to, like I said, I want everybody to win, man. I want everybody to win. I want
that's what we love about you, and that's what keeps you so humble. I mean, you know, you've always been humble and always tried, as long as I've known you, you've always tried to help as many people as you possibly can. And you know what? And
it's not Daryl's one of the good guys, man. He's one of the he's one of a kind.
And it's not just the R&B. It's not just the R&B guys. It's like drummers. You know, it's like you help drummers. It's not, you know, there's no like, oh, I'm only going to help the guys who play like I play, or, you know, the guys that I want to play like me. No, there's a lot of guys that look up to you. So I'm happy to have you on board with us.
Yeah, I had a lot, you know, experiences when I was younger. You know, God rest his soul, you know, Jeff Davis. Big Jeff. You know, it just hurts me because, you know, he was one of the guys that would talk to me more than sit down and show me stuff on the drums.
Right.
You know, in his conversation about the drums, about, you know, knowing how to, you know, be on time and knowing how to, you know, express yourself on drums was more essential to me than the playing. The sitting down and left, right, right, left, whatever. Like, it was more to that, you know what I mean?
The mind, learning.
Yeah, it was, I always make a reference to it. It's like, you know, you remember the show Kung Fu? And the guy, you know.
David Carradine.
Yes, he would teach the guy, and then the guy would go somewhere, and then at whatever situation he was in, he would remember exactly what the teacher just taught him. You know what I mean? And that's what Jeff Davis was to me. It was like, you know, he would say stuff to me like, yo, you playing too much in the verse. Yo, your hi-hat swinging too much, or blah, blah, blah. And I would be out playing, and I'd be like, man, I hear Jeff saying, yo, you playing too much in the verse. Are you playing? And I would apply what he said to me, and it would be perfect. It would be like, oh man, like as if he was there saying, don't do that, do this, don't do that, do this. And I always make that reference because he was the master, and he was showing me, you know, without physically showing me. You know, it's right, just like, right. You know, it's just like the Karate Kid. It's like wipe on, wipe off. Yo, man, I'm cleaning up. I'm not playing. I'm not fighting. Like, I don't know no fighting techniques. Yeah, you do. You just keep waxing on and wax off. And then when you get in a fight, you're going to see that the wax off and the wax on works. So
right. And, you know, and you respected him, which was a really big thing. Like, people respect you, because you could have been, and we know a lot of people, I'm not going to say who, you know, we know a lot of people that just go, oh man, that's old school. What does he know? It's like, I'm going to do it my way, man. I want to play these notes, you know, and not listen. But you, because you respected him and because you knew his experience. I mean, he was great. I mean, he was before you. So, you know, and
awesome.
Yeah. And awesome. Me and you, the last time I was with you was the last time I saw Jeff that time.
Yeah, right.
That was the last time we saw him before he passed. God rest his soul, man.
It's funny because I talked to him the whole week. The week that he passed, I talked to him every day. And it was crazy because I can hear, you know, he had COVID, but I think he died from a heart attack, but I'm not exactly sure. But, yeah, man, like, we talked every day, and we was talking about so much stuff in life, and, you know, trying to get healthy and making sure we eating right and doing the right thing. And you know, the drums came in a little bit, but, you know, it was more of that. You know, Jeff was at Whitney Houston's mom's church. He was the musical overseer there. And, you know, we was about to get him some drums for the church and everything. And, like, I'm saying, man, like, Jeff is a big part of who I am and who y'all know me to be, because it was just conversations, buddy. Just conversations.
Yeah, God bless his soul. He's watching over us now, man.
Yes.
And he's proud of you. I know he was proud of you. Yeah. He used to tell me all the time that he was very proud of you and a lot of people.
And Joe Smith, too. And, you know, I lost a lot of drum friends in the pandemic. I mean, Joe Smith, he passed away before the pandemic, but I lost Jeff. And I don't know if y'all know Kahari from Chicago. Kahari used to play for Destiny's Child before me.
Cajon. I don't know him.
Yeah, he is like the Jeff Davis of Chicago. So for Alvin and Rex and all of the Chicago guys, Kahari was the guy. He was the guy. And even what's my man that plays for Lionel Richie?
Oscar Seton.
Oscar is amazing, man. I met Oscar through Teddy Campbell. And, you know, Teddy Campbell explained to me who Oscar was in Chicago, too. You know, in Chicago, he was the dude that was, you know, playing in the clubs and, you know, going outside of church and playing, you know, along with Kahari Parker, who passed away, God rest his soul. But one, like, two of the nicest guys I've ever met. Two of the nicest guys, and, you know, they embraced me. They knew who I was. And
now, Gerald, it sounds to me like you've taken all that you've learned, and now the student has become the teacher, and you've applied all of that wisdom and experiential knowledge that you got from Jeff, and now you're able to wrap it into another level, taking all your experience additively to, you know, to the learning, and that's right. Now next level teaching.
Right. I'll be totally honest with you, man. Like, I never had no schooling on the drums, right? I don't know how to read, but my life experiences kind of helped me. But, like, I was talking to Steve Gadd one day, and he asked me a simple question.
That's your favorite. That's one of your favorites.
That's my guy. He asked me a simple question. He said, when you were in school, were you good at math? And I said, you know, math was my favorite subject. He said, drums is math. He said, you take the numbers and you divide them. And you take the beats and tempos and you divide them and you multiply them and you figure out, you know, what you can play in between certain things and what you can't play. So, you know, he's guru. So I'm just listening. But like I said, I've never had any schooling or any teaching. I sat down and played drums at my church because I used to be the percussion player. I used to be the kunga player. And I sat down on the drums one day because the drummer didn't come. And everyone said, you should play the drums.
How old were you then?
I was about 11 or 12.
Right. Years. I remember you were young.
I'm a late bloomer, you know, because most drummers that you guys talk to, they start at 2 and 3 years old with the frying pans and pots and the whole thing. I was the kunga player in the church, along with some other older kunga players. Where my church was, 170 Adelphi Street in Brooklyn, the community was Latino. So they would bring their kungas outside and just be playing, like, just random. Like, you know, when it's a nice day, I'm talking about, you know, playing on bottles and playing the kungas. And so those rhythms was always in my head. They were always, you know, when I went, you know, I'm playing outside playing football. And all of this rhythms and stuff is going on, but it's live. It's they are playing it, right? So my church, by the way, baptized Max Roach. So he got baptized in church in Brooklyn. And one day I was in there shedding and he walked in the church. And I was like, oh my God, Max Roach. Like, just crazy. And he was like, yeah, man. He was like, I was baptized here, so I just came to see it. He was actually playing at, I want to say, Mega Evitz or something. Like,
no, you didn't know he was coming. He just randomly came that day.
He just randomly came. I'm in there practicing. And he Max Roach walks in the church. And it's like, yo, I was like, I was ghost. I thought I seen a ghost, bro. I was mortified. And I just started talking to him. But, you know, my being wasn't jazz orientated at all, but I knew who he was because of my drum and because of records. And, you know, I always say my era is hearing. You know, my era is hearing. This era is seeing, you know, I went from listening to records and tapes and CDs to now we have YouTube, we have Spotify, we have, you know, Apple Music, everything. I can see a video in from anywhere. I can see a video from anywhere. So, you know, that's what it is, man. I mean, I just never had a lot of education in drums. I just knew how to sit and play, and that's what it's always been.
And I think that that's what made you become you. That's what gave you your own thing, because
yeah.
you were hearing things subconsciously probably, but right. You were feeding off your own. So you were creating, which is what you did. You created your own sound.
You know, I'm gonna be honest with you, man. Like, you know, being in the church world, you know, people get to find out your talent when you go to their church or when you go to a convention or something and you play. And it's like, oh, wow, that's crazy. This dude is dope. Where's he from? Where he from? It's like, oh, he's from New York. He go to this church, blah, blah, blah. So like, you know, now with the internet, there's really no best kept secrets. It's no, you know what I mean?
Right.
When you see like the little drummer boy play on the internet, you're like, oh, yo, that's amazing. But then you see him at NAMM, you'd be like, oh, that's the little boy. Oh, he's cute. That's the little boy that play on the internet. You know what I mean? It's no like wow factor. You
don't right. get
no wow factor no more because of the internet. I love right. the internet, but the right. internet is like a catch 22, you know, because exactly. there was a lot of hidden gems, you know, as people like, you know, at some point only my church, my parents, and my community knew that I was as good as I was. You know what I mean?
Right.
But
till
now,
till you were discovered.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Like, so the internet kind of brings everything out. So there's no wow factor when I see it in person now.
Right. You know remember the first time we all saw Tony Royce as a kid, man.
Right.
I remember standing when he played the Modern Drummer Festival, which you played the Modern Drummer Festival right. as well. I remember somebody standing next to me. I think it was Colin that used to work at Zildjian. He turned around to me and he said, you're going to witness history right now because I seen him before. You're going to see him for the first time and you're never going to forget this. and that was it. Like Tony sat down. I think he was like, I don't know, 11, 10, whatever he was. He was a
right,
kid,
right.
little tiny yeah, kid. Yeah. And he just blew everybody away.
And the crazy thing is in church, we have a lot of that. We have these kids that are gurus at the instrument and they just now starting out. But it's like, when they sit down, it's like, oh my God, like, is this really happening? This kid is like 10, you know what I mean? Like, you know, Mike Mitchell was 10 years old when I met him. He was 10 years old. His musicality was just off the charts, man. When he sat down and played drums, and you know, I met his mom and his dad and him, and I took them to D-Drum, cause like, I was like, yo, y'all need to get this kid. Like, this kid is gonna be something. And you know, it's a blessing to find and kind of connect with people, you know, like Spud and Calvin. And I knew all of these guys when they was young. You know what I mean? I was the one going to people's churches and playing and all of that. And they were watching me on TV and, you know, watching the tours and all of that stuff. So it's a blessing to see them come into the professional realm and to, you know, being in a magazine, being in Modern Drummer, or being, you know, on the internet sensation and, you know, having followers and all of that stuff. Like, this is a blessing. You know, Jamal Moore, you know, I know him since he was a kid.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, and I just have so many guys that I've watched, Sharik Tucker. I've watched these boys be boys, little boys, you know what I mean? And work on their craft and then come out like, bam.
All right, two things before we go that I really want to cover. Okay. Michael Jackson, tell us about playing with Michael Jackson, because I know you wanted to tour with him and that never happened, but you did get to record with him, which is, I mean, come on, Michael Jackson.
It's funny because the Rob Thomas, I wanted to tour with Rob Thomas too, and I was out with Destiny's Child, and I missed his tour rehearsals. Well, this is the thing. They were starting the tour rehearsals the day I got back from touring with Destiny's Child, right? So I was like...
And Destiny's Child at this point was huge.
Yeah, so this is... But this is Destiny's Child farewell tour. So this is the... This is the end, right? So check it out. So, you know, they call me and it's like, yo, can you do the gig or whatever? They call me in the middle of the tour. And I was like, yeah, I won't be able to do it. But they had, you know, the first day I got back home, they had rehearsals. But I found out they had a friend of mine, Abe Fogle, playing. I love Abe Fogle.
We love Abe.
Abe was the drummer for Guy before me. It was Abe, Jeff, then me, Jeff Davis. So it was Abe, Jeff Davis, then me. But I love Abe so much. I was like, just going to show up at the rehearsal. And I knew if I showed up at the rehearsal, they was going to be like, yo, we need to take you because you did the album, whatever, whatever. You know, because I only really did one gig with Rob Thomas. It was a charity event in New York in the Bowery section in a bank. And it was like $25,000 a plate. I did that one gig with him. And then I did another gig filling in for Abe later down the line. But I didn't get to go on that tour because I felt like I didn't want to get Abe throw it off the tour, basically. I didn't want to come in and just be like, yo, I can go. You know what I mean?
But, that was a very respectful thing.
Yeah, because Abe is my family. I love Abe, and I would never do anything to take money or food off the table for his family. So I was fine. I just came off a tour with Destiny's Child. The bank account was good. I was good. So I didn't get a chance to go out with Rob Thomas. Now, with Michael Jackson, I did... the last album that he did, I played on a song called Rock My World. And then I also played on 10 songs that didn't make the record. So I played on 10 songs, but two of them made the record. Rock My World and another song called Privacy is on that record. And working with Rodney Jerkins, we did that record. You know, I've met Michael 10 times and he never knew I played the drums. I met him with Teddy Riley because I did Remember the Time. I did some snare drum samples for Remember the Time. And also we was on tour with Guy and Michael Jackson took us off tour so Teddy can finish the Dangerous album. So, you know, I've been to Neverland and all of that stuff, but, yeah, I met Michael Jackson, spoke to him and everything, and he never knew that I played drums until we got to the Rock My World album, and then Rodney Jerkins was telling him, he said, yo, who is that playing the drums? And he said, that's Gerald. You know Gerald, he'd be around, like he'd be standing around, like, you know, that's Gerald. And he was like, man, he's awesome. And I was on the phone with Rodney as he was saying that to Michael Jackson, and I was saying, Rodney, tell him I want to play on the tour. I don't want to play on the record. I want to play on the tour, man. I need to go on tour with this dude. And he was like, no, I ain't saying that. I was like, man, I'm coming down there. You need to tell him. He was at the Hit Factory and I was home. I was like, man, I'm coming there. I'm coming there to talk to him because I want to play on the tour. So, but I never got a chance to. But like I said, I've met Michael Jackson plenty of times and been in his presence. With the producers and just been sitting in the corner, you know, not really saying much and not doing much, but observing. You know, Michael is he's a tall guy, man. He's kind of tall, big hands, big feet. And he didn't talk. Well, he talked in a high voice. And I'm gonna tell you the reason why he talks in a high voice. He talks in a high voice to keep his register high for singing. Hmm. So he keeps his vocals warm and able to reach those those high notes because he talk in a high voice. So his voice is, he's basically utilizing his voice at all times to be able to sing high.
So he's he's basically training his mind and himself to be in that mode.
He's training the octave of his voice, basically. So you know, if I talk in this register all the time. So if I needed to sing, I can sing in this register. You know what I mean? Right. But if I talk in a higher register, when I need to sing, I'll be able to sing in a higher register. So that's what he did. You know, that's why that whole talking high thing, you know, he would do that, but he would only do that in front of the cameras. He had a very regular voice, regular talking, all of that when the cameras wasn't on.
So. Now, did he have that aura? I mean, I never met him. So did he have that aura? Because I've met certain people that have an aura about them.
Right. Yes.
Did he have that? Did you feel that presence?
Yes. A lot of times I could tell you, man, even being around Rob Thomas, being around all these people, you know, I play for Shaka Khan, I play for Stevie Wonder, you know, for Mike and like all of these, I play for Sting, I've played for Elton John. And I have never really grasped the moment. I've always grasped the moment after it was over.
Right.
So it's like I'm at home, sitting home, like, yo, man, I just played for Sting. like, oh, snap. Like, that's when I grasped the moment. One day, I remember Aaron Spears calling me and saying, yo, man, do you know that you played for Michael Jackson? And he hung up the phone. And I said, I called him back. I said, yo, what you doing? Why you hang up on me? He was like, because I'm sitting here thinking and I'm listening to some music and it's like, Gerald, you got a chance to play for Michael Jackson and none of us is going to be able to say we did that. He was like, that's so special. That's so crazy. It's so awesome. And I was like, wow, I never really realized it like that. Like, I never really, you know what I mean? You know, you know, Mike is deceased. Nobody's going to ever be able to say they played for him but me, Jonathan, you know, God rest his soul, Ricky Lawson. You know, everybody else is not.
JR, John Robinson.
And JR.
And Jonathan Moffitt, you know, yeah, of course, Jonathan Moffitt.
And Dougal
would be.
So, like, it's not going to be, and I think maybe Jeff Porcaro, but it's not going to be a whole lot of us to say. He's saying in our community, you know, us, you know, where we come from, nobody's going to be able to say that. And one of the bucket guys, the guys that be on 42nd Street, he played on the song with me too. He did something, and I think he's on the song called Privacy with me. So
now these Michael Jackson tracks are still in the can somewhere.
Yeah, they songs that just never came out. Rodney Jerkins has those songs. I did those songs. I did on a Privacy song. It's crazy because I took a page out of Phil Collins' book and I took the bottoms off my DW drums. We put the mics up in the toms and we did, you know, got that whole effect, like the Air of Night effect, you know what I mean? On the drums. So that was my first time doing that. And it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. But yeah, man, 10 songs that I did and they 8 of them never made it. 2 did, and the other 8 didn't make it.
Wow. One last thing before we let you go. We recently had Mickey Curry on, who plays with Bryan Adams and Hall & Oates. And we were saying that, you know, he played on with both of them and toured with both of them at the same time. As soon, like back and forth, recording on the road. And we were saying we don't think there was anybody else, but there is somebody else, you. Because you toured with Mary J. Blige and Beyonce at the same time.
Oh, yeah. And I did, before that, years before that, I've done Silk and SWV back in the 90s, early 90s.
Early.
80s. So this is the funny story, real quick, funny story. So remember I told you that I was supposed to be a part of The Root, Fugees, right? So there was a guy named David Sonnenberg. He was the manager for the Fugees. And I want remember the song, If I, dun, 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 what I say now.
So, Spin Doctors.
Spin Doctors, right? He has Spin Doctors.
Aaron Comas.
Like, listen, he has Spin Doctors, Meatloaf, Spin Doctors, Meatloaf, and the Fugees, right? So my cousin Bernard worked for him. My cousin Bernard worked for him as a manager too. So he called me. I was on the road with SWV and Silk playing for both groups on a Bud Fest, right? So he called me. He said, yo, man. He said, my boss wants to have a meeting with you. And I was like, all right, cool. No problem. I said, we beat in New York on such and such date, and I got a day off. He was like, all right, come up to the office. Cool. I go up to this big office on Park Avenue somewhere. You know, I walk in. My cousin introduced me to David Sonnenberg. I sit down. He said, hey, man. He said, how are you doing on tour? I said, oh, man, it's great. I'm having a good time. I'm making all this money. And it's amazing, you know what I mean? Because I'm making double everything. And he was like, cool. He was like, I have this little Haitian group. And he was like, I want to put you in the Haitian group because I want to make it like a band. He was like, I got a girl that raps. I got a guy that raps and he plays instruments. And then I got another guy that raps. And he was like, I want to put a drummer in there to make it like a band. So he was like, I was like, okay, cool. He was like, it pays, you know, I think he said like $1,000 or $1,500 a month or something weird like that. Like it was like a low, it was low, right? And I'm like, dog, like I'm making double that over here. You know what I mean? I'm getting it. I'm getting it over here. Like, and then playing for two groups on one tour. Like that's, you know, that's guru status. So,
yeah. All right,
so cool. So I go, he go, yeah, I want you to think about it. And I want you to be a part of this group. They're called the Fugees. He said, they're a little Haitian group. They're from Haiti. One of the guys, they're from Haiti. And I want to make them a band. So I want you to be the drummer in the group. So to make it like a band. And I was like, Nah. I was like, I'm making too much money. I'm making way more than that over where I'm at. And you know, the loyalty is like, nah, I gotta do this. I can't do it.
And you're playing with two superstars.
Yeah, but then
this would have been taking a chance.
Yeah, but then I look stupid later on, 20 million records later.
I know, but you didn't. No one knew that at the time. That's the thing. You can't predict.
Yeah, like I was offered the Spice Girls gig because I did a thing with Blackstreet for like a it was like a MTV beach show.
Oh something. Yeah, they used to have their spring breaks all the time.
So there. So the Spice Girls was watching me play with Blackstreet. They send their manager over when I stop playing and he goes, the Spice Girls want you to be their drummer. And I go, nah, I'm good. I can't do it. I'm okay. Cause I felt like nothing for nothing, I felt like the Spice Girls was gimmicky. Like it wasn't, you know, like real, I ain't gonna say it wasn't real singing or whatever, but it was gimmicky.
Well, yeah, it was more of a package manufactured.
Yeah, package. It was gimmicky. It was a fad kind of thing.
Right, right.
And I was
but
like,
you were busy. I mean, if you weren't busy and you needed a gig, you probably would have just said, yeah, not knowing what was gonna happen.
Yeah, every group, man, 98 Degrees, NSYNC, yeah, all of them, man. I was supposed to do those gigs. And I couldn't do those gigs because I was being loyal to Teddy or being loyal to Blackstreet or being loyal to, you
Beyonce
know.
Beyonce and everybody. Yeah,
I was being loyal. But yeah, that Spice Girls pissed me off because the next thing you know, that movie was out. And I was marinated. I was looking at the movie like, oh man, fix me again.
Well, You did good for yourself. So thank you for taking this time and joining us today. And we got so much that we could cover. So we're definitely gonna have you back. And we're kidnapping you now. So you ain't, you know, that's it. You're part of the family. You've always been part of the family, as you know.
Well, I'm the steward of the drumming community on behalf of Modern Drummer and what Ron Spagnardi started 45 years ago. And we take it very seriously. And, you know, the whole point of it is to celebrate the great drumming that occurs every day of our lives and the guys that are inspiring that drumming and innovating that drumming. And you absolutely are one of those guys and have been for a long time. So this is the beginning of a lot of journeys together. Thank you today for being with us. And we wish you, you know, continued good health and great drumming.
Thank you so much for taking this time.
No problem.
And we'll see you again soon, definitely.
No problem, Billy. Thank you. I love you guys, man.
I love you too, Gerald. Man. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Peace.
Thank you, everybody, for watching this week's Modern Drummer Podcast. Stay tuned for next week's episode exclusively on Podcast One. Until then, stay safe and healthy, and thanks for listening and watching.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards. Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.